KPTZ welcomes you to another edition of Through Science to Health, our twice-monthly program with Lynn Sorensen, RN retired, and co-host, yours truly, Chris Bricker. We bring you discussion and updates nationally and locally on ongoing issues and developments surrounding the COVID-19 crisis. Lynn Sorensen, welcome.
Yes, thank you very much, Chris.
Well, nationally, as usual, a lot going on, some unpredictable, some predictable. It looks like U.S. cases this week surpassed 6 million in the Midwest. Positivity rates have reached alarming levels. In Iowa, for example, 10.3% of COVID-19 tests came back positive on Monday, slightly below the 14-day average of 11.1%, according to state data. And overall, the state, which currently has no statewide mask mandate, has recorded 65,478 cases.
Wow.
With new cases rising 50% in the last 2 weeks. Sort of a rolling fire throughout the nation with no consistent national direction. It's almost like, putting out a fire over here one way and trying to put it out another way over here, over there. That's where we sit nationally. And then universities and colleges, Dr. Fauci says that not necessarily did they open too early, but rather they were unprepared to deal with the cases and with screening and establishing of some kinds of testing intervals or testing protocols in general. So that's kind of like where we stand nationally. Locally, what's going on, Lynn?
Well, locally, we're still doing okay. Our positive cases are now at 70, but they've done about 6,800 tests. And so I think we're doing pretty well. Dr. Locke on Monday for his briefing to the Board of County Commissioners, he had a lot to say this week. And I took a number of notes, but locally, there's a hospital in Bremerton. It used to be Harrison Hospital, but as of June, it's called St. Michael's, and they had over 60 positive cases there, staff and patients. They have 160 staff members in quarantine, and 2,000 employees have been tested and will need to be retested. I mean, this is a big deal. I think it's the largest outbreak in a hospital in the state of Washington anyway.
It doesn't do much for the medical infrastructure, does it?
No. And so I know they're going to try to get to the bottom of that one, but that is like a house on fire. And who's going to go back into it? And also one other concern Dr. Locke talked about was that he's hoping that the Labor Day weekend, which is almost upon us, won't be like the 4th of July, which he called a disaster for Washington State, because gatherings were large, mass use was probably limited, and people ignored the guidelines, and therefore we went through another steep rise in cases too. So just so many things to consider. You know, we're doing okay here, and compared to Clallam and Kitsap, we're doing very well in Jefferson. So is it just because we're also, adherent to the recommendations, or I don't know, but it's certainly still in the community, and we are getting, some positive cases, still more than we had previously. We were at, I think, 28 for the longest time, and then we have gone up from there.
Lynn, what's it looking like statewide?
I don't have really any numbers on that, but I think we're doing okay. I think they were considering Washington being kind of at a plateau, but anything can set it off again. I didn't look up those numbers in particular.
Yeah, I quickly looked at a chart. I don't have numbers in front of me either. It looks as though it's kind of a hopscotch kind of a situation where numbers are up in one county and they're down way down in another county. And then there are some counties that are just like, by comparison, through the roof.
With WSU opening, I know they had a number of more cases in that county.
The summer break for the virus never really happened.
No, it did not happen. No, it didn't take the time off. And so, are we still in the first wave, or are we calling it a second wave? I don't know. But I think we can just imagine this will be how it's going to be for, I'm thinking about a year at least. A lot depends on, of course, the vaccine development and distribution and application. But that's yet another story.
It looks like there are a couple of phase three clinical trials, one of which is a phase from AstraZeneca. It's a UK-based global biopharmaceutical company, and they're starting some clinical testing in the US, and that's coming up. But they're not looking for any kinds of results probably until this late spring, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there's a number of interests that get this all together and distributed by before the November election. But I really hope that doesn't happen in any shape or form, because I just think it's pushing the envelope. And although the CDC is saying, oh, no, we're not going to allow anything to get pushed without the proper amount of testing, et cetera. But I think they are also under, the White House is pressurizing that situation as well. You know, there are over 170 vaccine development, I don't know if you call them companies or whatnot. And I think 7 of those are going now to phase 3 trials. So it's very complicated endeavor. The World Health Organization is trying to get everybody on board so we aren't hoarding it in one country and not allowing it in another. And our administration has decided who is not worth the money. And so they've pulled out their support right during a pandemic. And I just don't understand that at all. But, you know, the putting the vaccines together and big deals, it's big money. And, you know, it's something that the whole world should be able to access. I know that I think the U.S. didn't buy into something called a global access facility. And Trump has accused the WHO of being too China-centric in response. And so he doesn't want to participate in this or that. It's very short-sighted, because the whole idea is to discourage hoarding and to focus on vaccinating the highest risk people in every country first. And I don't see that playing out. I'm feeling a bit pessimistic about that.
Well, we can't see hoarding the vaccine like we hoarded PPE, so.
They just hide it somewhere.
Yeah. Just prior to our conversation, we did find out that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has told public health officials around the United States to prepare to distribute a potential coronavirus vaccine as soon as late October. It also provided planning scenarios to help states prepare. The documents were posted by the New York Times, and the CDC confirmed to CNN it has sent them to the city and state public health officials. The scenarios offer details about distribution for 2 COVID-19 vaccines when supplies may be constrained, unquote. They also advise the states on who should get vaccinated first: healthcare professionals, essential workers, national security, quote, populations, unquote, and long-term care facility residents and staff. What this all means, of course, Lynn, is that this is a developing story and it's subject to further analysis and development. So let's keep our ears and eyes open. Well, there's, what else? There's a possible treatment being developed at Alberta University.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
What's the story on that?
Well, I heard about this just this week, and it's at the University of Alberta. And it's an actual treatment that would be given to someone who already has the infection, I believe. But what it does is it supposedly is effective in inhibiting the viral replication in cells. So it should stop the infection if it's able to do the work that is has been found. And it's interesting that this was something that was developed again back with SARS outbreak of the severe acute respiratory syndrome, and that was in 2003. And then this particular drug went on to be used by veterinarian researchers who found that it was a cure for a particular coronavirus disease that's fatal in cats. So someone has pulled this out again and say, well, let's try it on this coronavirus. And it's been going so well that apparently there's a rule in COVID research that all results need to be made public immediately. And this is so that they're posted before even a peer review. So this moves this whole apparatus on to a much higher level quickly. According to this study, they're saying current drug shows enough antiviral action against this coronavirus to proceed immediately to clinical trials, which is great. I mean, so this is not a vaccine. This is a treatment for someone who has been infected. So I think that would be great and very promising, apparently. And so like the remdesivir, I think I talked about this one last week, but that too was developed back in 2003 for the SARS crisis. And so again, that's a treatment, but it's not a vaccine. But these two are working along the same similar lines anyway.
Let's talk about our national pandemic experts. They seem to be scattered a bit here.
Well, what didn't help this week was that the CDC apparently came out saying, oh, we're going to discourage the testing of close contacts. And that just went against everything that, you know, public health and CDC has been saying before. But I read in some article that it was found out to be a White House recommendation for the CDC to say that. So, I mean, what can we believe? We, you know, public health, credibility, and this is what Dr. Locke was saying, credibility is the most important asset. You know, you got to earn that trust. And if public health loses that trust, you give away all the power, and scientists therefore are losing, and, you know, you take the back seat to politics. And this sounds like it was, you know, certainly a political move. You know, again, Trump says, if we don't test people, we won't find out how high the numbers are. It will look better. So I don't agree with that philosophy, however. And there's a new doctor at the White House, has the White House's ear, and his name is Dr. Scott Atlas. I mean, he has credentials. He's a senior fellow at the Stanford Hoover Institute. He's a neuroradiologist and not an immunologist. But he's been pushing herd immunity. If enough people get sick with this virus, then the virus won't find that many bodies more to infect, and that'll stop the pandemic. Well, we'd have to have, I think, 60 to 70% of the population to have had the disease for that to be true, and which would probably expect, I don't know, close to 1 million deaths as a result. But again, the herd immunity is not the way. This is what Sweden did. They didn't shut down. They, you know, didn't have masks or other mitigation measures used. And they had some very high numbers and death because of that. So that was the global experiment. And why it's now being thought of as a good idea for the United States, I don't see how any doctor would push that. But apparently he's considered the anti-Fauci and has also clashed with Deborah Birx.
Yeah, there may be some clashing going on, but as you mentioned at the outset, the flow of information, accurate information, is really important, and the ability to place credibility and respect in our science and medical professionals that know a thing or two about this when we can't put credibility in the administration right now. I heard the other day, though, in an interview that Dr. Atlas flatly denied that he was propagating the herd immunity concept. And he was saying that, well, he sort of sidestepped a little bit in, it sounded like he was being a little bit diplomatic with the administration, but he was emphatically denying that he was propagating that concept. I don't know. When you take a look at the administration and sort of like the hands-off attitude, it seems, at least symbolically, and the politicalization of not wearing a mask, and I'm speaking from a personal point of view here, not necessarily as a spokesperson for KPTZ or anything like that, but it just seems to me that when you're looking at the disproportionate cases in the United mm-hmm. States with people of less means, that it's kind of a slap in the face at anybody's attitude towards equal treatment. We're talking about
the right to live, essentially.
Yeah,
and it tests the values of our communities. You know, it's just, they have a lot of tests going these days, not just in the vaccine world, but, you know, the communities and people and politics, and there's a lot of strife, and a lot of it is, you know, necessary, I think, but I sure wish that we had had a national plan on how to deal with this pandemic and not being left essentially to every state or every public health community to have a coordinated response. It just would have helped so much. But now we're, 9 months into this, and we still don't have it.
Well, we're looking at a number of vulnerable communities out there that deserve our respect and behavior.
Yeah.
Masking up, social distancing, all of those things that are not new by any stretch of the imagination, mm-hmm. more than 100 years old. You know, but it's a way of being able to suppress the virus to the point where we're able to develop something that should be equally distributed to the entire world's population.
Right.
Well, we're just about out of time here. Anything you want to add, Lynn?
Well, I know that school's supposed to start in the district here it'll start on September 8th. And, you know, they're working on kind of hybrid in-person versus and remote. I think the high school will all be online only. But, I mean, it'll just be interesting to see how it works out, because they can figure out what's going to happen in the schools. But really what's more important is what happens at home, what happens in student activities outside of the school or outside of the campus. You know, it means everyone on their guard, really, and trying to keep this in front of their minds when, you know, this is very hard for adults to do it, much less, you know, children or teenagers or, you know, people that kids just want to be kids. More power to them.
A lot of pivoting and a lot of creative juices flowing, I have to tell you, in just about every school district in the nation. So, well, Lynn Sorensen, RN, recently retired, longtime community member of Port Townsend and an advocate for public health awareness and promotion, and a member of KPTZ's Virus Watch team. And I want to thank you so much, my co-host, for joining
thank
me
you.
For another edition of Through Science to Health.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris, very
all,
much.
All right, Lynn.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Our theme music is from Wings with Things by Liz Story.